This is Doc Talks, a Doctors of BC podcast. During each episode, Doc Talks will engage with physicians on timely and relevant topics impacting the medical community in British Columbia. Our host is Dr. Matthew Chow, President-elect of Doctors of BC. Dr. Chow is a psychiatrist in Vancouver and has been involved in medical leadership for a number of years. He's currently the co-chair of the Specialist Services Committee and serves as the Doctors of BC representative on the Medical Services Commission. And now, here's Dr. Chow.
Welcome to the first episode of Doc Talks. I'm Dr. Matthew Chow, President-elect of Doctors of BC, and today we are going to be discussing topics surrounding patient medical homes and primary care networks. We'll start with some basic definitions around patient medical home and primary care networks. Then we'll talk about team-based care and concerns around staffing. Finally, we'll touch on urgent and primary care centers and how the vision for these has evolved. My guests for today are Dr. Brenda Hefford, Vice President of Physician Affairs and Community Practice at Doctors of BC, and Dr. Shelley Ross, Co-Chair of the General Practice Services Committee, past President of Doctors of BC, and Family Physician. Welcome to both of you. Perhaps you could give us a brief overview of how your roles connect to the topics we'll be discussing today. Brenda, could you start us off?
Sure. Thanks, Matt. So my role for the last 5 years has been an executive role at Doctors of BC. And in that role, I've been providing support to the General Practice Services Committee and overseeing the projects and the initiatives that the committee has put forward. So my role intersects with this work in a very deep way, in that I am able to be present and helping to support the strategic discussions and the governance discussions that happen at GPSC, but in addition, able to help with the actual implementation of this work as it rolls across the province.
Great. And Shelley?
So as co-chair of the GP Services Committee on behalf of the Doctors of BC, my co-chair is Ministry of Health ADM Ted Patterson. And all our work in the last few years has been towards developing an integrated system of care to make things better for the patients in British Columbia. And the basis of that work is the patient medical home and the primary care network.
Great. So now we'll get into some of the questions. We'll start with foundations of patient medical home and primary care networks. What is a patient medical home?
I like to think of the patient medical home as the full-service family doctor's office. We have the patient at the very center because that's what it's all about, is looking after our patients. And wrapped around the patient is their family doctor's office. It coordinates care. It provides comprehensive care. It makes network connections with other physicians, other patient medical homes, with other allied health professionals and nurses. And it has some supporting things like the EMR, research, teaching. So it's basically, when people think of getting medical care, where do they go? They go to their doctor's office, which is the patient medical home.
Then my follow-up question is, what is a primary care network?
One of the things we're trying to do is to develop a team-based care approach to providing care for patients. And when you look at the primary care network, it's that whole team working together. So it includes not only the patient medical home, but community agencies, health authority staff, various programs that are offered to patients. So it's everything that can touch patients and provide services, all networked together into an integrated system of care.
How do patient medical home and primary care networks relate?
Certainly, the foundational unit is the patient medical home. And we've long known that physicians are spending so much time doing work that's non-physician work. We spend our time doing things that really fall under the realm of social service, physio, dietitian, counselor. So basically, the patient medical home needs the support of the team, and that team is the primary care network.
I would say the primary care network also represents the system that surrounds the patient medical home. So the patient medical home, as Shelley says, is where care is provided. And the primary care network is, besides being the other providers and the other organizations, it's actually can represent how the system changes and can change to be more supportive of the actual work that needs to be done at the clinic level.
I know a lot of folks on the ground are asking, what will change in an average practice or clinic?
Physicians will be freed up to do doctor work. And certainly patients will benefit because doctors are not always the best people to do things that are not in their training. They aren't necessarily the best social workers. If we have social workers that can do that work, patients are much better off. Doctors are freed up to do doctor work, and that increases capacity in the system.
Over the years, the needs of our patients and the needs of our communities have changed and evolved. The system was built really to support acute episodic care, and yet most of the care that we need to provide now is chronic, ongoing care in response to increasingly complex needs. A key change, as Shelley mentioned, is the team. And when you have patients with more complex needs, they really need the care of a team of providers, not just one provider. And physicians really need to have the confidence that they are supported by a team.
So much time can be wasted looking for resources. If we have a team in place where patients naturally fall into a system where things are organized, they can get the care that they need. Staff is not spending countless hours on the phone, making referrals, trying to find the services that people so desperately need.
So with the team, it improves, as Shelley's saying, the ability to provide the comprehensive care that patients need, but it can also increase the capacity of a practice. And we all know that a huge issue right now is the number of patients in our province, the number of people in our province that simply don't have a family doctor. So we also hope that by having access to a team, it expands the ability of a practice to care for more people.
You know, some folks have expressed this concern that as we develop these multidisciplinary teams, that somehow the role of the family physician will be diluted, or that they'll just become one of a whole gamut of primary care, quote unquote, providers. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Certainly, the family physician is the person that people turn to when they want care. The idea of having a team is to be able to provide services for patients that aren't physician services. So certainly the intention is that physicians will continue to see patients, but they will have the help, particularly for the complex patients, that goes beyond what the physician normally provides in the office.
My reflection on this would be that since the GPSC started, it's been committed to supporting full-service family practice, and that hasn't changed. With the patient medical home, it's like that takes that to the next level. So it really looks comprehensively using a well-studied model that's being applied in jurisdictions across the world to really redefine what is full-service family practice and how does it need to be organized. So some of the key differences are, for instance, looking at your practice as a whole, the work that we're doing to support family doctors to understand their panel of patients and to be able to use the information that's within their EMR to understand the care that they're providing and improve the care that they're providing. A key difference, as we've mentioned already a few times, is the implementation of teams in a practice. So it takes the concept of full-service family practice, which at its essence means longitudinal care, and helps to support it in a more deep way. There's many studies that show that the more continuity you have, the more you're connected in a long-term relationship with a family doctor, the better your outcomes are in the long term for your health.
And knowing your panels is so worthwhile. It helps you define what team do you actually need. It also allows you to do preventative care, so you're not waiting till someone is sick. You're making sure their immunizations are up to date. You're making sure that they've had all the screening procedures that are required for their age. It's looking at the panel, at your patients over the lifespan to make sure that they're getting the care that they need from prevention to treatment to end of life. And certainly it's most satisfying for a physician to know their patients and know them for generations.
Something interesting that I'm noting here, sometimes governments and even, medical organizations are accused of changing just for the sake of changing, implementing a change that's politically driven. It sounds like from what you're describing here that patient medical home and primary care networks is firmly rooted in evidence. This is a scientifically based intervention. But even more than that, it also sounds like in some ways it's intuitive for the family physicians that are on the ground. I would suspect that many family physicians have long realized that this is where we need to go. So this perhaps may not come as a complete surprise to them.
Doesn't come to as a surprise to physicians at all. Certainly, when you're doing full service longitudinal care, you realize what you need to provide for patients.
I guess when we look beyond the complicated terminology, what we're really talking about here is helping family physicians be the best family physicians that they can be.
Yes.
Very well put. I was thinking back to when GPSC did a visioning exercise, which is now almost 5 years ago, I think, 4 to 5 years ago, where they heard from family physicians all over the province about what would their vision of an ideal family practice be. And as the GPSC really examined the responses that were received, what they realized is what was being described had already been described, and that was called patient medical home. And that was when GPSC actually adopted the patient medical home as its vision for the future and adapted the model of the Canadian College of Family Physicians and tweaked it to respond to the context of British Columbia.
Because, of course, in British Columbia, we always have to be a bit different. And where we tweaked it is we tweaked it in the networking aspects, the networking of patient medical homes together, so that as a group you could provide all the services that patients needed. Not everybody can provide maternity care, sports medicine, palliative, on and on and on. But as a group, you can provide all those services. And then the other networking was with allied health professionals.
This leveraging of each individual's interests and sort of domains of expertise, this reminds me of what our specialist colleagues do every day in their facilities and in their multidisciplinary practices. No one can ever do everything. You have to be interdependent. You have to rely on other people. And this is what this sounds like.
And yet the traditional model of being a GP was to actually be all things to all people. And this has changed over the years to become this more comprehensive vision that we've described. The other thing you need to realize in BC is that as GPSC was looking at primary care networks and patient medical homes, how to support them and how to move forward, we had a firm foundation of networking within the divisions of family practice that have encompassed most of the communities in our province and experience in working with partners to develop systems of care through the partnerships between divisions of family practice, health authorities, and other community partners. So this stands us in good stead for moving forward together into the new vision for the future.
Excellent. What is team-based care and what are its benefits?
I always think of the maternity team because I've spent so much of my practice providing maternity care. And in that team, everybody knows what their job is. There's nobody trying to do the other person's job. When needs are there, people jump into the void, fill that void quickly without a lot of instructions having to be given by anyone in particular. And certainly that results in excellent patient care and not a lot of instructions, but everybody knowing what their job is in the team.
You know, when I think back to residency training and running codes, that's sort of my vision of what a really well-formed, well-organized, seamless team looks like. Everyone knows exactly what they're doing. And quite frankly, if they didn't, then there would be a very negative outcome.
When you're going to implement a team, as you said, it's more than putting a bunch of providers into the same room or into the same office. They do need support in terms of learning how to function as a team. You wouldn't think of putting a sports team together by just giving them uniforms and a ball and just launching them onto the field. They need a coach. One of the things that the practice support program has been working on through GPSC has been working on a framework for coaching of an interdisciplinary team, working in partnership with UBC. And they have a series of both modules and in-practice coaching that actually addresses the need for a team to be able to function as a team and does very practical at the elbow teaching and training of the team as a whole, not just the doctor, but the whole team, so that they're able to function to their capacity as a cohesive whole rather than as fragmented providers.
And of course, there's the team that's in the doctor's office, and then there's the team that's outside the doctor's office. So for example, in a doctor's office, an LPN, an RN can certainly work very efficiently with the physician, triaging the need for patients to be seen on the same day that they call, managing phone calls, making sure that people don't wait for timely answers to their questions. Whereas outside the office, maybe the social worker, maybe the physio, maybe the dietitian, that all physician offices, all patient medical homes in the community can access. And we'll talk later about the urgent and primary care centers, where often they may be the place to house this outside team.
We see lots of examples in British Columbia of creative answers to what is a team. So as we've talked about, there can be team members that are embedded in a family doctor's practice. But we have many examples of virtual teams, teams that may not be co-located. For instance, starting in Fraser Northwest, the idea of a nurse who's able to extend the reach of a doctor's office by seeing frail elderly in their homes. We have examples throughout the health authorities of redesigning home health so that nurses become an extension of the family doctor team. We have some divisions of family practice using arrangements with counseling agencies, not for-profits, being able to actually extend the reach of a family doctor's office by offering access to counseling services that otherwise the patients wouldn't be able to afford. So there's many different variations as to how you can incorporate another profession to help to care for patients' needs, not only within a clinical practice, but also connected to or extending the reach of a clinical practice.
It sounds like there's actually many different versions of team-based care, that in fact there's a certain flexibility to it.
And certainly knowing your panel of patients will determine what's the best team for your patients. You know, in a maternity-type practice like I had, certainly services that would support pregnant women are very essential, whereas if you have a practice with a lot of palliative care, then of course that would require different specialties, different services as well. And one of the things that's very important when we talk about the team is how we bring in our specialist colleagues. Because with so many people having chronic disease, complex situations, there's often a need for them to see the specialist on a regular basis. And we need to make sure that there's a good communications back and forth between GP and specialists. And that goes beyond specialist services, which are often health authority-led services, but they are not necessarily the specialists.
I would say the essence of team-based care is having providers who are from different professions. So they have different education, different skill sets, different scopes, working together to provide a broad range of services to patients. So you can have a team that's composed of all family doctors, but that would not be an interdisciplinary team. And so when you have different disciplines working together, it just gives a much more fulsome picture of the kind of care that you can provide to a patient who has a complex array of needs.
In a way, it sounds like team-based care supports generalism.
Team-based care is generalism.
There, that's a mic drop right there. I've heard some concerns about team-based care. One of those concerns is around team members who may be employees of a health authority. Do you have comment about that?
So in the way teams are currently being provided through the primary care networks, the plan is for them to be employees of the health authority that then are deployed to family physician practices. And family physicians have had a lot of concern about that because in their own practices, they're used to being able to choose who they work with, choose who's employed by the practice, ensure that they're a good fit, and that they're answerable to the practice, to the family physician who employs them. So having a team member that is actually not paid for or employed by the practice itself can create some challenges and some concerns.
I was just reading your mind, and I was going to say, however, Fraser Northwest just the other day informed us that things have changed a little bit in that although the health authorities will be employing the nurses, they will be able to sit in on the interviews and find the nurse that's most appropriate for the practice. It won't all be seniority. It'll be fit as well as seniority. Because one of the concerns is that longitudinal care applies not only to the GP, it applies to the whole team. And if we have bumping on the basis of seniority after patients get to know a team member, that is destructive to the team-based care.
It sounds like folks are listening to these concerns and addressing them.
Yes, and I think that this is what will happen. This is new ground for everybody. And as we move forward on new ideas, we realize that we're not going to get it perfect right from the word go. And so we're all familiar with the PDSA cycles. So I'm a great believer. Let's start moving things out now. Our Wave 1 communities are starting to roll out their service plans. Let's see how it goes. There's going to be some bumps in the road, but let's have the ability to step back, do a PDSA, and say, this is not working. We need to make some changes. But we need to see some action before we can make any changes.
One of the thoughts, I believe, behind having the team-based care providers, allied health providers, or RNs, employed through the mechanism of the health authority is that that provides some backup resources. It provides some business resources, some HR backup, etc. I remember being at a divisions meeting a few years ago where they did have a social worker that was working with the Division of Family Practice through the funding that came through a previous initiative called A GP for Me. And that social worker was a great success and working well with the community. And yet the social worker also expressed that he was feeling a bit professionally isolated and that he would welcome the opportunity to be more closely aligned and even employed by the health authority so that he would have that professional practice support at the same time as reaching into the physician practices and providing that kind of support. So there's pros and cons everywhere. And as we say, it's a matter of moving forward. These are resources that are being offered to primary care and to family practice that have not been previously offered. And let's just see how we can make it work the best for both the providers and, of course, for the patients that we're serving.
There's something fundamentally different about this initiative, this primary care reform, as compared to other healthcare reform efforts that I've experienced in my career. Usually, we spend so much time in committee planning, strategizing. It takes years. And then finally, we make very, very small movements. With this work, it sounds like there are very aggressive timelines. Things are moving very quickly. But at the same time, there's a risk that sometimes we'll break things or that we'll make mistakes. What are we doing to account for these risks?
So first of all, I think that using the word initiative is the wrong word. A GP for me was an initiative that had a beginning and it had an end, and it was very successful in attaching patients and making sure that patients didn't become orphaned when their physicians retired. We've built on a lot of the things that were developed through a GP for me, but this is not an initiative. This is a transformative change. This is moving step by step towards a different way of doing business.
When we're looking at fundamental system change, it's actually uncomfortable. So we're pushing the envelope in a lot of ways. We're pushing physicians to think about how they practice differently. We're pushing the system to think about how it organizes itself differently. We're pushing other providers to look to work differently in how they intersect with family physicians and with family practice. We're looking at teams differently. So there are going to be times where it's uncomfortable for everyone because this change is affecting a variety of providers and a variety of systems. So you're right that this is quite different than anything that we've seen before. And no amount of planning and discussing will get it perfect. The only thing that's going to get us moving along is to just do it and learn as we go. We're already learning about areas where we need to adjust in terms of process and how to move forward. And we have to continue to go bravely into these changes with that learning mentality in mind on all fronts.
And as I recall, there are actually protections written into the physician master agreement that protect physicians, for example, with respect to alternate compensation models that have specifically been written in there thoughtfully to protect us as these changes go forward.
That's right. These changes are voluntary. You can work in your practice in the same way as you've always worked, be paid fee for service, and continue to bill. But to have these expanded ability to be part of a team and part of a network requires some courage in stepping forward into the unknown. But you're right that there is protection in that you can always go back to how you practiced before.
We hear time and time again that fee for service is not compatible with team-based care, because fee-for-service is based on seeing patients. And so much of the work you do when you're working in a team is preventative, it's looking over charts, it's making sure that the whole picture is covered. And that is not billable on a fee-for-service basis in a way that compensates physicians for all the work that's being done.
I would also say that we've heard from physicians that the current system is not working. Physicians are burnt out. They're tired of trying to provide all the care and, in addition, all the administrative responsibilities that come with the longitudinal care of patients over time. So something has to change. And we have to be active participants and leaders in the change. So the change is needed for the patients that we serve and for our province. But we hear from physicians that they need change. And so we have to walk into this new system together.
I've heard family physicians remark that they've been the glue holding the healthcare system together. but they can only do it for so long. They can only continue to tolerate the current situation for a limited period of time before they too burn out.
I think that there are many physicians that are burnt out. We hear repeatedly about the administrative burden, the paperwork that goes on once you finish seeing patients for the day is often several hours, and it just grows and grows and grows. So there's got to be some help to do this work that's beyond patient work as well.
I think a lot of physicians would be reassured to know that some of the most senior leaders in the province are aware of the burdens that they experience as frontline physicians. They are acutely aware of, you know, the burden placed upon them by paperwork and forms and EMRs and the lack of interdisciplinary team-based care.
Certainly there's been attempts to engage all GPs around the province, mainly through the divisions of family practice. So there's opportunities for physicians everywhere to become involved.
So how can a GP become involved? I would say you can become involved in the change that needs to happen at many different levels. First of all, within your own practice, really take the opportunity to step forward, learn about your patient panel, figure out with the help of the resources through PSP how you can use the information that's contained within your medical record to understand the care you're providing to your population of patients and to develop mechanisms for improvement. In talking to physicians that are involved in this work, although it sounds very dry and unappealing at first, it actually becomes something that really excites them. They see tangible efforts being rewarded in terms of their understanding of the care that they're able to provide to their own patients. So at a fundamental level, within your practice, you can become involved. Then on a community level, getting involved with your division of family practice, being part of the planning, if you're not one of the leaders in the community, at the very least, give feedback when asked. Give your input, bring your ideas forward. And then when there is the opportunity for provincial sharing or learning, be part of the conversation. Make sure that you're able to find ways in which you can be confident that your voice is being heard. I would say another way that you can become involved as a GP is open your mind and your thoughts to what it would be like to work with another team provider. Really be embracing of the other professions that want to work with you and figure out how you can work together. There's so much work for everyone to do that it's a beautiful opportunity to learn how to work differently and to not feel threatened by working with other professions, but actually feel that your work is being enhanced by doing so.
You know, I want to focus on that word for a second, enhance. It really sounds like this is what this is all about. Enhancing family practice, enhancing family physicians, enhancing generalism. I don't hear anything that suggests that people's role will be diminished.
And there's a lot of work that's done in the family doctor's office now that won't change. We're talking about improving things for the complex patients, for those that need the team approach to help them with their illnesses. So certainly there's going to be enough work to go around. Nobody needs to feel threatened that the team is going to take their job away.
I think one thing that we need to really be clearly communicating is the value of family practice. There is an inherent value in the care that's provided by family physicians. And introducing change into the system and introducing teams into the system is not a comment on poor care that's been provided. It's a comment on the need to provide better support for the care and to be able to enhance the care by having a team. So family physicians are very interested in ensuring that they're providing the best quality care. And the changes that are being introduced will help them to have the confidence that that is what they're doing and that they have the resources to continue to improve as time goes on.
Let's talk about urgent and primary care centers. What is a UPCC?
A UPCC, or Urgent Primary Care Center, was originally envisioned as a center for patients to get acute, urgent care, particularly after hours. And that's how it was implemented in the first few communities that were slated to have a UPCC. I noticed you asked what is an urgent and primary care center, and that points to one of the key differences as the policy has evolved within the Ministry of Health and influenced by the work at GPSC. So urgent and primary care centers implies that a piece of it is for urgent care, but the vision for the UPCCs has evolved so that they are seen as a hub for urgent care that is linked to the patient medical home and linked to the care of the community as a whole, but in addition is a center where it can provide a route to attachment for patients who do not have a family doctor. So some of the more expanded view of the UPCCs comes from what we learned in a GP for me. So it can have an element of care for especially vulnerable patient populations that might not fit well within a traditional family practice and truly need the support of a team around them. It can have an element of being a hub for team members to be connected to family practices within the community that perhaps don't have room to house team members. It can become a route to attaching patients to a family practice through providing transitional care. And it could even provide a hub for having practices have more room to even combine their practices to work together with other practices. So the vision for urgent primary care centers has evolved from being entirely about urgent care to being maybe just, say, 30% about urgent care and 70% about team services to the community and attachment for vulnerable populations.
I've heard concerns that UPCCs may contribute to fragmentation of longitudinal care. Do you have any comment about that?
As the UPCCs were originally envisioned as being almost entirely about urgent care, they have even more potential to fragment services. But in a more expanded view of the urgent and primary care centers, the urgent care should be part of the community care services, but also the other portion of it that's really dealing with attachment is actually integrated as a key component of the PCN. So the UPCCs have the potential to actually be a hub for the PCNs rather than fragment the PCNs. So it's all in how they're actually implemented.
How would UPCCs interact with existing family physicians and existing family practices in the community?
They could provide services, for example, after-hour coverage, housing the team of healthcare professionals that are not in practice team, but the out-of-practice team, helping with attachment and being able to attach appropriate patients to appropriate practices.
So a UPCC could become part of the larger primary care network?
I think not only could, I think it's essential that they are part of the PCN.
Thanks for joining us today on Doc Talks to chat about primary care networks and patient medical homes. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Brenda and Shelley.
This has been Doc Talks, a Doctors of BC podcast. You can find Doctors of BC on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and online at doctorsofbc.ca.